Live Creative Now, episode 56.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. In my last episode, episode 55, I talked about something that has made a lot of creators feel pretty badly about themselves, and that includes me. And that is an idea, or the idea, that if you can't honestly say, I do my creative thing because I can't not do it, if you can't honestly say that, that does not mean you are not a real artist. So check out episode 55 if you've ever felt inferior to all those people who say they make their art because they can't not make it. They have to make it. Today, episode 56, I am sharing some thoughts that were inspired by a fellow artist and blogger, Ellie Trier. I think that's how she pronounces her name. Ellie invited me to participate in her 31-day project that she calls Demystifying the Artist. She invited 31 different artists to answer the question, what does being an artist mean to you? And if you join her Demystifying the Artist mailing list, and I'll include a link to that in the show notes, then she will send you every day in the month of May a new essay from a different artist about, you know, answering that question. And it's been really interesting to read what the other artists have been writing. And as I was working on my own answer to that question, I realized it would make a really great podcast episode. So that is what I'm sharing with you today. So on with today's episode. Live creative now. Live creative now. What does being an artist mean to me? It means allowing myself the freedom to play, to explore, to make messes, to follow my curiosity, purely because it feeds me to express myself in this way. Being an artist does not have anything to do with medium or tools or format or genre. And in fact, I would go so far as to say that whether we're talking about visual artists or writers or musicians or any other kind of creator, there is only one difference between artists and everyone else. And it isn't talent, and it isn't skill, it isn't taste or style or whether or not you make money from what you create. It isn't awards or public praise or attention. It is much more foundational than that, and it's perhaps more subtle than that too. The only real difference between artists and everyone else is entitlement. Yes, entitlement. Because here's the thing, before you can create, you need a sense of permission. You need an internal understanding that, yes, you get to do this thing, that making art, in whatever form that takes for you, is not something that's reserved for the elite few, and it's not, on the other end of the spectrum, a frivolous, self-indulgent waste of time. Entitlement means that you see creating as an important act, as a worthy act, an act that you have just as much right to as anyone else. This entitlement, this inner sense of permission, is innate. We are born with it. Every single person ever born was born with that entitlement. It is our birthright. But the problem is, most of us lose our sense of entitlement by the time we reach adulthood, and often long before that, often when we're really, really young. If you've heard of Brené Brown, you know, she's a shame researcher, and she has, and if you haven't heard of her, then you need to look her up because she's amazing. She has spent a really good chunk of her career researching shame, and her data shows that over 40% of the population that she's worked with can remember a specific incident from school, from their school years, in which they were shamed around a creative act, shamed so badly that it forever changed how they thought about themselves. My best friend was shamed around drawing when she was little. We just had a conversation about this the other day. And, you know, it's not a big surprise that she has avoided drawing ever since then. She doesn't even enjoy going to museums. And my mom, when she was in the school choir, she was told publicly by the choir director, "Mouth the words, honey. Nobody wants to hear you try to sing." So can you guess how she felt about her voice after that? Pretty badly, right? And I know so many people, I know more people than I can count, who have similar stories, and I'm sure you do too. And maybe you have your own story of being shamed around creativity. Now, I was really lucky. Nobody said nasty things to me about my art, but as a pre-adolescent and as a young teen, I managed to do quite a good job of shaming myself by stepping right into the comparison trap. I compared my work, my art, my every, you know, my singing, my writing, everything. I compared it to other people's work that I admired, and mine always came up short. So when I was 13, I gave up making art entirely. Back then, and this may have happened to you as well, it seemed to me that being an artist meant being able to draw. For some reason, this is what we tend to learn as we grow up, that drawing photographically, realistically, that is what it means to be an artist. And although I wasn't terrible at drawing, I was also not one of those kids who just naturally excelled at it. And now, from this vantage point, looking back, I understand that drawing realistically is just a skill. It's a skill that can be developed with time and effort if you're interested in it. But at 13, I didn't understand this. Plus, 13 is a pretty hard time of life. And at that point in my life, I was pretty consumed with self-hate, as a lot of young teenagers are. So when I noticed that there were kids, let alone other adults, who were able to translate what they saw onto the page more skillfully than I could, I drew the conclusion from that they were the real artists, not me. So I quit. I didn't make any art for 15 years. And a few years later, I did the exact same thing with music. I was actually in the high school chamber orchestra. I played the viola. And if you want to be a nerd, play in the chamber orchestra. Anyway, it was clear to me that other kids were better at their instruments than I was at mine. Like the first and second chair violinists, they were so much better than I was. This is why I was first chair viola, not first chair violin. So my conclusion from the fact that they were better, they were more skilled than I was, my conclusion was that they were the real musicians, not me. So I quit. Now I'm kicking myself because, God, how cool it would be if I could play the viola with any facility. I then repeated this exact same scenario again in my late 20s when, for a very brief time, I decided I was going to become a writer. But the problem was, I read a lot and I couldn't write nearly as beautifully as my writer heroes, So once again, I concluded that they were the real ones. They were the real writers, not me. And so I quit. And I didn't write for 15 years until I started my blog, Living a Creative Life. And I discovered that actually I can write fine. I don't have the same prose skills as other people, but writing is how you learn how to write better. Doing art is how you learn how to do art better, etc. Anyway, for most of my teen years and well into my adulthood, my young adulthood, I truly believed not only that I wasn't an artist, that I wasn't a writer, that I wasn't a musician, I believed that I was not creative. I believed that I was a non-creative person. I seriously believed this. And, you know, now I refer to myself as a passion pluralite because I pursue so many different creative interests, from painting and calligraphy to songwriting to improv to playing the ukulele. Anyone who meets me now, they just laugh at me. They find it impossible to believe that I once thought, like truly believed, that I was non-creative. But that is the truth. I spent a good 15 years at least living my life in shades of gray, black and white, with my poor, malnourished creative spirit locked in a closet. And the problem I can see with hindsight was not that I wasn't good enough, which is what I believed at the time. The problem was purely that I lacked entitlement. See, when you're entitled, you make space in your life to create. You don't go on the assumption that only the specially anointed elite few get to create. You don't go on the assumption that everything else in your life is more important than your creative expression. You don't go on the assumption that a negative judgment of your work means anything other than that person's individual opinion. And it certainly has no bearing on whether you should keep doing it. And this applies even when the negative opinion about your work is your own. You may still have those self-critical gremlin voices, even if you are fully entitled. And in fact, anytime you do something truly creative, you will have those self-critical gremlin voices because gremlins exist to keep you inside your comfort zone. And creativity only and ever happens outside your comfort zone in the zone of uncertainty. But when you're entitled, you don't give the gremlins any credence. You hear them, but you don't let them drive the bus. You are the one driving the bus. So now, when my gremlins tell me, as they very often do, that, oh, so-and-so's work is so much better than yours, or, you know, they're the real artist, or real writer, real musician, real teacher, real performer, whatever, Melissa, you're just a hack and you should really quit, I just thank my gremlins for their opinion, and I thank them for trying to keep me safe, and then I send them off to get a pedicure, and I get back to work. Here is the thing. When you are entitled, your desire is the only requirement. And guess what? When you have entitlement and a strong desire to do your creative thing, your art, you will do it. And when you do it, of course, that will make you better at it. Even when you're convinced your work is total crap, when you have entitlement and a strong desire, that feeling like, oh man, my work sucks, that doesn't stop you because you can simply remind yourself that some days are always going to be better than others. And besides, remember that Melissa says we need the crap because it's the crap that fertilizes the good stuff. It's the crap that fertilizes the good stuff. We need the crap to fertilize the good stuff. So, how do you regenerate the entitlement that you had as a child? This is really the focus of everything I do as a creativity instigator, a speaker, a writer, a teacher, a blogger, a podcaster. For me, because I've had to do that myself, regenerate my own entitlement, it has been a matter of setting that as my intention and then practicing. Sometimes it's a matter of faking it till you make it. Whatever gets you through the day, whatever gets you to do your art. I also had to forgive myself for being human, for being less than perfect. I had to allow myself to make crap. I had to remind myself that we need the crap to fertilize the good stuff. You're not going to instantly make good stuff. You got to crank out crap in order to learn how to make the good stuff. And I had to learn to dismiss the gremlins. And this is a big one for me, to spring the comparison trap over and over again. I probably step in the comparison trap 6 times a day. That's not the problem. The problem is when you don't learn how to spring it and just keep going. This setting the intention that I am going to reclaim that entitlement back for myself. I'm going to make this thing. I'm going to do this thing that's important to me. That is what artists do. This is what allows me the freedom to play, to explore, to make messes, and to follow my curiosity. And that is what being an artist means to me. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me. If you would like to join me in a live setting and get more of this kind of wisdom piped into your ear over dinner and lunch and breakfast, and have 5 days of unlimited, unrestricted create time, uninterrupted create time, come to my Create and Incubate retreat. It is just an amazing experience. It's hard for me to articulate in words how wonderful it is to gather with other warm-hearted, generous, lovely, lovely people in an intimate, small retreat setting where everybody is working on their own creative projects. It's just incredible. And we start every morning with what I call a creative catalyzing session, which gets everybody laughing and out of your head, which is where the gremlins lurk, and into your body, which is in present time, which is where you can fully create, freely create. We do that every morning. I think I laugh more at the Create and Incubate retreat than I do anywhere else. It is just such a special, special event. It's happening this year in August, August 17th through 21st, and you can read all about it and reserve your own spot at createandincubateretreat.com. I would love to have you join me there. Thanks again for joining me, and go get creating.
Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.